Okay, I see it's 6:15, so.
Let's have a prayer and pledge. Our gracious God, Father in heaven, we give you thanks, Lord, for all the blessings that you bestowed upon us. Thank you, Father, for the love that you give us. Ask you, Father, that you be with us in this workshop meeting setting, that you would help us to think clearly and to articulate our thoughts in a clear manner. Whatever we do and accomplish here tonight, planning for the affairs of this county, that you be with us and you bless us. Anything we accomplish, we give you the honor and the glory. For in Christ's name we ask you. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to remind everybody that this is on a workshop and we do not vote at a workshop. If there's something to be voted on, then we put it on another agenda, usually the next agenda. Number three, the board to continue discussion of potential Restore Act projects. If y'all recall, the last time we discussed this, and I don't know how long it was, about 2 months ago, time just flies by. But at that time, we decided to ditch the plans that we had previously worked on, and instead we discussed stormwater drainage solutions for steam hatching. We also talked about trying to find ways to direct control traffic around the boat ramp at Keaton Beach and also in Steen Hatchie. It's very congested in both places during certain times of the year. Commissioner Moody had talked about Spring Water Fish Camp. There's a boat ramp there that's for sale. And I have a project that I'm about to embark on, and that's the restoration of Hodges Park. The floor is open for anybody that wants to speak.
I'd like to bring up something we talked about in the past. There's a bypass right behind the parking lot across from the boat ramp at Keaton Beach to stop that traffic from coming down there and having to turn between the boat ramp and the parking lot. And I'm not sure, but I believe that's something, being it would be there at the waterfront for the boat ramp area, it would be something we might could use Restore Act money on. And, I mean, that's one of the, every time we talk about it, something, you know, legal to do with Restore Act money, it takes a lot of questions and answers before you can ever come up with something. But improving that boat ramp, it would be something water contained, waterfront contained, and, you know, it would be something we could use it. And that could be done, and that would turn the traffic coming behind the park right there, and that road there could be part of the parking lot and staging area for the boat ramp. Would really help that boat ramp hold its weight as far as the traffic goes right there, you know.
Yeah.
I just think it's something we need to be thinking more
Did
about.
Did you have something to say about that?
Yes, more clarification. You know, I agree with everything you said, and my question is, to one, I understood, if I understood wrong, I apologize for bringing it up. I understood that you can't spend Restore Act money on roads unless the road has to erode. You remember that conversation?
Right.
So would the loop that Jim's talking about, or the Tanner Bridge, or the riding around the Steen Hatchie, I don't know if they qualify.
The direction that we received from the Gulf Consortium was that a dirt to pavement project could qualify if you could show like there's sediment that is being placed into a waterway or an estuary. So that would qualify as an environmental project. Now, we did ask for some guidance as far as a bypass, and the answer that we received was potentially that could be an eligible project because it adds tourists to our tourist development, and that could potentially be a project. So I think what we would have to do is, instead of trying to give an answer for all projects, we could take the projects one by one to the Gulf Consortium leadership and the consultants and ask for guidance for particular projects, which I would be, I think if we could identify particular projects that you're interested in, we could receive guidance on that particular project.
Well, I would support a bypass around, and that's basically what you're saying.
We have eliminated all that jam right there. It was just really, and I saw a plan years ago where they were talking about building something there before that home was sold. It had to bypass. It started there about the tower and went hit over about the corner store. It was just a nice curve.
I would support that. Ursula,
in addition to what Mr. Moody's saying, when the storms come in, that road in front of the boat ramp is the first thing to flood there.
It does. Mm-hmm.
It walks everyone in. Therefore, if you do have a bypass around there, that's another evacuation route that some of the residents can use to get out of there.
Now, the only potential issue that we've identified is that corner where the coastal park is environmentally sensitive. So we would that's something that we would have to look at. We would have to stay away from any environmentally sensitive areas, which may be a challenge in that particular area. But
was it a wetlands?
Yes, ma'am.
90% of Taylor County's wetlands.
Mm-hmm. Part of it's wetland, part of it's fine rock. Mm-hmm. I looked at it one day, I rode in there and looked at it. I remember years ago, I walked all over there with Johnny and I on it years ago. And there's some pretty high ground on part of it. The only wetland right there, the ditch across from the corner store, right in that area, that I can remember.
I think it may loop around that corner, that may be something
we can look at. I know that even though it's sensitive, environmental sensitive part, but that gets done in projects like that all the time, just like the turnpike that they're going to build through Florida.
Exactly right. Well, let me just ask the rest of the board if this is a project that y'all would support. It's your district, let me ask you first.
Well, if it's going to have an impact where it benefits the community in that area, if it is going to impact the community for the benefit, then I would be for that project. I wouldn't see why anybody wouldn't be for that project. It's going to help alleviate the stress on that corner. And Ursula is right. When it floods there, you can't get in or out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've got to go back up 12 and a half miles Jody Grade because I can't make that right-hand turn 1,000 feet. From Jody Grade to that stop sign is 1,000 feet. Even if we get a high tide, just like we did the other day, it flooded the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
So to have some sort of alleviation, that would help. And maybe we need to discuss grander projects in the future, but the immediate project of doing some sort of alleviation.
Mm-hmm. So you're okay with it?
Yeah, and I've spoken with a couple people out there as well with the same issue. We couldn't get out during this one. Either A, put Jody Morgan Grade back on the hurricane evacuation route, or implement a bypass to get around. Because if people come from Steinhatchee and they surpass Fish Grade and they don't make that right-hand turn on Fish Grade in attempts to get to the boat ramp and beach road, they can't do it. They would have to turn back around to Fish Grade and come up Fish Grade. So it would be interesting to see something like that. I don't know if the impact of the ecological impact of it is going to deny it or not. I don't know how that's going to work.
No,
until we try.
But the concept, though.
But if we can prove necessity,
mm-hmm.
and a project like this would, I believe, fall under that definition.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Dix.
Sounds like a good project to carry. Sometimes it's just a matter of words instead of it being something for tourism. Tourism, like you want to get more park people in the following month. Use another one. I don't know what the word you might use to say that if tourism, if the rescue act money cannot be used for tourism, use another word, or even use that word.
Mm-hmm.
Use something else.
That's right.
Make another statement.
That's right.
To sort of imply that that's what you need.
That's
right.
It's for rubbing. Yeah.
And to eliminate your rubbing.
My turn.
Yes.
I support the bypass around and the Cuba Beach boat ramp.
Okay.
And as far as it going through some wetlands, we built Providence Road in the wettest time of the year. Up North 19, going in there to that Les Lethal thing.
Mm-hmm.
I never seen a road built in a swamp where the water was waist deep, but they hauled enough sand in there, they built that road. So I think there are ways you can get around that, but I have to mitigate.
Mm-hmm.
And but let's make an effort to do that.
Sure.
I also support doing what we can do at Spring Ward. We've talked about to kick that can around for about 4 years to revive him.
Right.
And
that would take a lot of pressure off Keaton Beach.
A lot of pressure. And I had a citizen that spoke to me highly in favor of that. And he said, that's where I go out fishing a lot. And it would take some pressure off of the boat ramp at Keaton Special. And we scrapped the big plan, you know, for the big major boat ramp. And that already has a small boat ramp.
It's got a darn good boat ramp.
Right. We could acquire the property with the restore right money. Then we probably could get a third half grant to build a boat ramp if we needed to. I support that. I support Stenhouse flooding. I support Hodges Park. And I thought, what else is it that I could support? And I can't come up with anything except the fact that, you know, we don't have to spend all our money in 1 year. You get overloaded in projects. This is a 15-year drawdown of these funds. So I don't know if there's any, how many you want to take on at one time. And well, I don't think the money's out there for probably more than we've already identified.
We have $4.8 million available now in Pot 3 funding.
By the time we get some of these done, we'll have more than $4.3. But I can see it taking the $4.3 to build the Key Beach loose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just guessing. But those are good projects.
Now, what about some kind of detour around the Steinhatchee boat ramp? I mean, that's a mess down there. Steinhatchee is not through growing yet. They're growing and growing and growing. They're outgrowing us.
I agree with you 100%. And there already are streets that you could get around behind there with some traffic control devices, with lights or whatever. And what we talked about, Stenhouse probably needs a study. You know, since this community is growing, you need North Central Florida Planning Council, I think they'll probably do this for us.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a study, something about what you envision that we need as far as a bypass.
Well,
that's how we get the one we're talking about. Yeah. But I agree, we want to include that in our list of projects.
Yeah. Okay, now let me just back up. You've said, you know, all the things that you were for.
Right, okay.
Are you done?
I'm done.
Okay.
I've really depended on y'all.
And I said that I concur with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got two more commissioners, so, you know.
At this current time, I'm working on a few things to bring to the county's attention, but I don't have all the math involved, so I'm not going to bring it up at this time. But with these projects that have been proposed, I would be in agreement with them. I would say that they're good. Oh, Jim, I have a question for you. On your project down there at Spring Warrior, after this project is done, how many boats, how many parking slips do you propose down there?
I believe there could be, I've seen at least 40 trailers and trucks parked
right
there before.
That's now, but if you expand
it. And you could expand it some right without any environmental issues.
Understood.
All that scrub that are right there where you make the curve right under the cedar trees and all that can be cleaned up and high enough ground.
And that probably was for sale.
Yeah, all that for sale. And then there's the property that runs out into the marsh there along that other road that come head down toward the creek. It's high enough there and then a lot of it's in the marsh. You know, but it's from what I've heard they wanted for it, it's a good product.
So you would envision about 60 slips?
I could see 60 trucks down
That would help.
Or if it cleaned up and rock, lime rock put on it, or milling, you could probably.
That's pretty good.
That would help alleviate Keaton Beach and Steen Hatchie.
Steen Hatchie, you park about 200 there? I mean, at Keaton Beach?
About 175, something like that. Really? Spread out, on the side of the roads and everything.
When you sit there at Keaton Beach, or at Deacle Beach in the morning, daylight break, all them boats was coming out of Keaton Beach, 90% of them headed up that way anyway.
You're right.
I mean, they just come out of the canal and all of them come out on past Deacle Beach and going to the Spring Warriors. All that oyster bar, where holds all them redfish and trout. And all they go far to Rock Island. From Rock Island back to Spring Warriors, the best fish in Taylor County anyway.
Mm-hmm. We just want to make sure that when that happens, that the public is well aware that there's that boat ramp there.
Yeah.
But I do want to remind the board that if we acquire any land, that we have to have an appraisal, right? And you know, we want to give a fair price. We don't want somebody to gouge us.
Right.
It has to be a fair appraised value that we that we would offer. Okay, Commissioner?
It sounds good to me.
Okay.
Just like I said, now, I don't think that is environmental sense down the Spring Warrior like it is going into Keaton Beach.
I think it would be less.
Well, part of that would get about a bit more. Get a mix quicker, but it's not environmental sense.
Most all of
it. And there was that seagrass.
Right.
Now, yeah, they prime on that seagrass. And I think maybe four people in the whole country live off that seagrass. And the others live off, I don't know what.
Well, and you know, the project we've already identified it, that I'm very interested in is Hodges Park. So right now we've got a possible bypass at Keaton Beach Boat Ramp, a possible possible bypass around Steen Hatchie. We've got Hodges Park, we've got Spring Warrior, and what was the other one?
Steen Hatchie flooding.
The stormwater property in Steen Hatchie. So that's what, five? Is that five projects? Probably more than we'll ever have the money to do, but.
Well, if I could speak to that.
Sure. We'll come up here so we can hear you.
So we've been, staff has been working to identify some other funding sources for some of these projects that the board has in mind, just so we can leverage all the funds that we have. And I had a conversation with Army Corps of Engineers representative today, and if I get agreement from the board or concurrence, what I would like to do is send a request to the Corps of Engineers for technical assistance. And they have some funding available where I'm hoping at the very least they could provide us with a feasibility study for the Steen Hatchie area for stormwater control. Yes, and what I'd like to do is send a letter to the Corps of Engineers. We have not worked with them previously on grant opportunities. So I'm very excited about it. This may open some other doors, but we feel like we might need to start with a small area and see how this works out. I believe if we are approved, the funding would be available a little quicker than going through the SEP amendment. Mm-hmm. Now, just to remind the board, the SEP amendment is something that we would take to the Gulf Consortium in January. Mm-hmm. Then there's a 45-day MYIP public comment period, and then it would be possibly approved at the next meeting, which would be, say, around March or April. So, you know, it's not something, an SEP amendment is going to take some time. But what we'd like to do is work on some of these opportunities as we go along to see if we can leverage these different funding opportunities with the hopes that something will come through for us. We don't want to put all our eggs in one basket. We also are going through, we're planning to submit a grant application for hazardous mitigation funds for a countywide feasibility study, or really, it would be an engineering study for stormwater improvements, and we'll be working on that as well. Now,
Other districts, and because, you know, we've all got flooding issues in our districts that need attention to.
And when I spoke with the Army Corps of Engineer representative today, he did tell me that there are different programs available for technical assistance. But the bigger scope that you have, the more of a match the county has to make. Which is why we were thinking about concentrating on a smaller area, but we'll bring that back to the board. Also, we could possibly apply for a land and water conservation grant for possible renovation of Hodges Park. Now, that grant application is due January 15th. That is a $200,000 grant with a 50-50 match, so it would be a $400,000 project. So what we would like to do, if the board wishes to move forward with improvements to Hodges Park, we can start working on that grant application now, submit it in January, while we're also going through the SCP amendment process. And we're working with Corps of Engineers and Emergency Management for Hazardous Mitigation Grant Funds.
Okay, now I envision that $400,000 will not be sufficient to do Hodges Park. So, where would the remainder come out of the
Restore Act?
I'd rather take it all out of Restore Act money if we could, so we wouldn't have to spend
that match. We could use Restore Act funding for the match.
For the match?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's why we're.
But I'm like you, I don't know if you've got to redo paving and new bathrooms. You know, in government, everything costs more to get done than if it was Citizen A out here bidding this out. So I don't know if $400,000 will do
it. It will not.
Yes.
No, I think just preliminary thinking, it would be probably double that. But what we would do is pledge the match from our pot three funds.
Okay. Good work.
Well, another thing too that, and you know, you and I have talked about this, but I'm interested in and starting to look at some plans and get something together, and then we can get a price tag for it, and we know exactly what we're talking about then.
So the hope is that we could, if we submit grant application for the Land and Water Conservation Fund grant, January 15th is the deadline, then Kenneth feels like that he could have a preliminary design to send with that grant application, and that would give us an idea of any type of price for that project.
Well, what is in your way of doing that?
Hunting season.
I mean, to get the grant ready for January.
We just need concurrence from the board. If you tell me tonight that that's something that, you know, you would like us to start working on, then we will work on it. Now, the other piece of the puzzle that we need, we have to have our five-year CIP approved prior to January, because that gives us, that's a must with this particular grant.
That's just me.
That's it.
Yes.
Yes.
So, and we'll, you know, we'll talk about that later on in the meeting, but what I would like you to do is to review that. And then if we need to discuss it at the November workshop, and then we just would need to approve it in the December meeting. So we can have all of that approved prior to the grant submission deadline.
Well, for me, it's a go for me to go ahead with these grants, because I'm going to leverage all our money that we can, leverage everything that we can. So.
It's a lot of moving pieces, but I was really encouraged after my discussion with the Corps of Engineer representative. He is very helpful. He's already sent me a draft letter for submission, and they will schedule a site visit to discuss the different programs that they have available. And I was very, very encouraged after our conversation this morning. Now, again, this is a new program, so I'm a little anxious about it. We have not requested grant funding from the Corps of Engineers before.
Mm-hmm. But they don't have any money to take out a sandbar and not keep them canal. It hinders our fishermen from coming and going.
I did bring that up today.
How's it going to help us?
Well, this
will be nice to remember.
This is a different pot of money. I did bring that up today.
Your pot.
Mm-hmm. Different pot of money, different program. And you did
bring up the sandbar.
I asked, you know me, I did. I told him we could wait 10 years for that work to be done. And he did say, well, I understand, but this is a different program, and from what I understand, it's funded a little differently, and he was very encouraging. Now, again, I mean, we haven't seen the grant application. We don't know what we'll have to promise, but I would like to at least discuss it with
him
and see if we
can.
You know, one thing, you mentioned Providence Run,
yeah.
And when they were doing that project, you know what held it up one time was that indigo snake. Do you know that that's a protected, indigo snake is protected. And we were talking about that last week down in where I'm at.
I was a kid, he used to kill them with a stick all the time. They'd be 6 feet long, big old.
I got one other thing I want to bring up that we need to put in line to do too to help the waterfront park. From the then all the way river blew down, down the river. That the last storm to blow down a bunch of trees in the river. And we need to get them trees out of that river.
I had a call about that.
We got commercial fishermen, crabbers and fishermen come and go in there, and at low tide they hit the trees. And we need to work on getting them trees out of that river.
That's right. But I'm sure the same person that called you called me, and he had what I think was a great idea. He was talking about there in Hampton Springs of making that where you can put canoes in, and when you clean out the river, get all these trees and logs and everything outside the river, right there you could put canoes in and you could canoe down that Ben Hollow, because the Ben Hollow way is a beautiful river.
Once that pipeline goes into operation, that's going to be a beautiful river.
Yes,
canoe
it
and kayak down.
Yeah.
And the Hampton Springs Park at that time will take a big turnaround.
And is that something that, now how could we fund something like that?
I don't know.
He's already talked with everybody, and we were like the last stop. But but we do need to find out how we can get the trees removed. Like Mr. Moody said, and let's look into if everybody's okay with it about putting a kayak launch there, canoe, because that would liven that place up.
It really would. I know this for a fact. I went there and looked at it. They have put my name and number, phone number, my cell number on a tree up so high right there. When you come out of the boat ramp, you can see. If you have any questions about this boat ramp, call this number. they got a good sign up with my name and number on.
Yeah, one other question that I have, the dredging of the canal at Keaton Beach, where are we at with that?
Well, if you'll recall, at the October, I think the last board meeting, the board approved the grant application for the design, permitting and engineering, I believe. So, as far as I know, Langton was submitting that grant application, and then it's been pre-approved by Treasury. But Treasury has to approve the grant application, and then we can move, then we'll have to have an RFP for those services, and then we'll move forward with that.
I've had someone express to me their opposition to Langton. Like, if you had any problems with this group, I'd rather share the name of this person privately with you.
I've had some frustration and the length of time it's taken
a year to do something that shouldn't have taken a year.
But I don't know how much of that is because of Treasury. So we really would need to go back and unravel.
Well, I'll just share it on the fringes. I'll share more about it later.
And they have agreed to appear before the board and give quarterly updates, which I think will help all of us understand the timing and help all of us be accountable as far as the time it's taken to move this project forward.
Well, we're in a hurry.
Let me talk about the Spent Holiday Landing. Is it called Hicks Landing, Jim, the one?
Yeah.
Hicks Landing, you know, that seagrass out there is not in the...
It's not in the seagrass reserve.
I had a citizen approach me and said, you all can't do any dredging because it's in the seagrass reserve. He said, I'd like to put it in down in the Holloway. And if you, somebody could permit a channel out there through that, and not seagrass. But then I was told by another individual that what we thought was, I guess, Georgia Pacific's property, that they're selling that. Obviously, just, all you know about that?
Four Rivers on the development rights on the Holloway, young lady getting, probably knows that. I don't know what happened, but I don't know how much water is going to be in the river when they take it out of the mill anyway, you know.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that Four Rivers has the first option.
To buy?
Yes, and they're going to exercise that.
You know, you don't put a boat ramp if you don't own any land. Not like Cape Bridge. They've got a bridge down there, nobody owns the land. But anyway, I thought it had a little bit of merit if you want to, if you go out to Spring Warrior, but then all the way, not that far, kind of close together.
Do you know what I've seen with Four Rivers, and this is rule of thumb with them, liability is liability. Yeah. They don't want no boat ramp, if I can tell you.
No, they don't.
That's exactly right. They don't want boat ramps. So they, chances are, hopefully, keep your fingers crossed that we can keep using that boat ramp on and on. Yeah.
They're robbing. They don't put a gate down there.
Right. They can't block the road right there to the boat ramp, but that's county maintained road. You know, but they actually own the footprint of the boat ramp. You know, or they don't act on it. It's on them, George Civic County and together.
But they don't have to provide Citizens Place Park, you know.
That's right. I think down the road they'll work with us on it. They'd rather us have the liability than them.
Yeah. So, for clarification, we've got our five projects that we have identified. Mm-hmm. And pretty much we want this to be it. We don't want to have to come back and change this SEP again.
I would think that this will be it for now. I mean,
and everybody's okay with that.
If 5 years from now, if we have money left, we come back and change the SCP for them.
But right now,
I think our plate's full. If you can work the issues all those by the project.
Well, I understand that we guarantee the money. They're not, you know, if we spend what we get our project done and we got more money coming, they're going to give us some more leeway to use that money for waterfront projects.
I'm going to ask Conrad, that prompted this question. If we're guaranteed that money, could we then take a loan on it or something to do some of these projects? Or how risky is that guarantee?
That would be risky because, you know, we all heard that that BP might file bankruptcy. I've always been afraid of that, you know, because the longer this goes, the more.
Well, we're going to get nothing.
I hope that doesn't happen, but.
Well, we know we have the $4.8 million, and then we have a sequencing table that shows how often we receive funds.
Mm-hmm. If they don't go bankrupt.
I don't know that. I think that the $4.8 we have is secure. Treasury has that. But,
I'd like to see the cash.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, how do they operate? Do they, once you do a project, you pay for it and then you get reimbursed?
But from what I understand, the drawdowns have a very quick turnaround because, you know, we've discussed that several times that, you know, it is reimbursement, which is probably why we're doing one project at a time. And so what I think we need to do is go through the SCP amendment process and bring that back to the board before we submit to the Gulf Consortium. and then we'll have the public comment period, and once that's adopted or approved by the Gulf Consortium, then at that point, I think we'll have a better idea of other funding sources, and we can ask the board to rank these projects and see which one you want to do first.
Mm-hmm.
And by then, I think that other counties will have more experience as far as the drawdowns, how long it takes to get the money back, if there are any issues, and it will just put us in a better position.
Will all the counties start getting their money at the same time, or it depends on when your projects are, mm-hmm. and have any of them started yet?
I think that the first grant submissions were approved by the Gulf Consortium. Oh, it's been recently, so
it's been, I don't know. In the last few months.
I can't recall.
For which counties?
I forget, in some school area.
It was several counties, and I believe most of those projects were subject to sewer. There maybe have been an estuary project. But other counties are now submitting SEP amendments. We're not the only one who have had a change in what direction you wish to go. So I feel the consultant has been very helpful. And as soon as we get guidance, I'll send that to him, or Melody and I will work with him, and we'll start moving this along. So I may come back and say, okay, well, you know, we may need to reconsider, but now I have the list and I can move forward with that.
And let's monitor the other counties that are already, just see, like you say, how long is that turnaround before they get reimbursed? Because, mm-hmm. you know, with us, that would be very important.
But I did speak with Heather Pullen when they were here for their quarterly report, and she and Mike Langton said, oh, the turnaround is a lot quicker than you're imagining, because I was quite anxious about that. So that was reassuring.
Okay. That was either Santa Rosa or Okaloosa County. I don't forget which one it was.
It may have been. I know this sounds familiar, but I can't recall.
Okay, any more discussion on number three, Restore Act projects?
Thank you.
Good. If not, we'll go to number four. The board to discuss employee incentives. Rwanda?
So typically this time of year, I will bring information to the board, just advising you of our balance of funding in reserve for capital improvements, and ask for feedback from the board if you're interested in funding employee incentives. As you know, we did not fund pay raises this fiscal year because of budget constraints. So typically what we'll do is see what our balance is in general fund, reserve for capital, and then we will also look at our last payable will be the first meeting in November, and we'll see what was returned by constitutional officers before we ask you to make a final decision, unless you're comfortable with the balance of funding or you wish to not offer incentives.
If we can afford it, I'd truly love to give them.
I'd like to give them. Since employees haven't had a raise, since Commissioner Russell was here, mm-hmm. and that would actually have a pay raise, mm-hmm. which causes some angst the following year to mm-hmm. cover that. Mm-hmm. I don't think, as much as I'd love to, that we can afford to give, quote, a pay raise,
mm-hmm. you know,
because this is non-recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. I would support a bonus, not by vote, a performance incentive.
Well, just an incentive.
An incentive.
Right.
And I see a figure here of $1,000 for a full-time employee.
Mm-hmm.
You remember last year the infamous gift card came back to buy us?
And that was a very small
representation
of our employees.
And I don't want to get caught again and saying you make this so little to insult us. So I would support it. The thousand and some rest of the board would.
Now that's $1,000 net, so that's why the cost is so high, and that would
and then $500 for the part time.
Yes, sir. So we have
one shot there. Just one shot. This is you.
Yes.
Commissioner. Speak your mind, girl.
I would probably be a little more conservative than that.
All right, back up. Throw me out a number.
That seems, if you look, what's the total of that?
378. That's less than what we got back from this year.
$1,000, yeah. 378.
Yeah, here. There it is, that's broken down. I figured if I started with a high number, I could always come down.
750 ain't bad.
750 ain't bad.
And then you're.
Is it before or after times?
That's the net.
The net.
Yeah. I'll bet nobody would turn that down. And I bet we wouldn't have a delegation up here plus that.
We did a 500 and 250, what? 2 years ago? Was it 2 years?
I believe that was.
Mr. Russell's been dead 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Frank Russell was here the last time they had a raise, was that 3 years ago?
But we're talking about this Christmas gift.
Yeah, Christmas.
I think it makes it easier to point out we get a 500 for full time and 250 for part time.
Well, now, this isn't all. We hope there's some more cash carry forward money. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I'd say 50. That'd look good to me. That would be impressive.
Mm-hmm.
For hardworking people. You know,
we have many employees who were thrilled with a gift card last year, I will say.
Well, I think, you know.
So.
I could move over 1,000 as low as 750, but anything lower than that, I'm not going to support it tonight.
1,400, 750 part time?
No.
750, half that.
500 would be smart.
750 for a full time employee,
yeah, 375 for a part time. I see
and
that.
Y'all can't vote on it tonight.
No,
this is just talking points. I mean, we would have to bring it back to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the second meeting in November. That way we'll have the numbers firmed up. We'll know exactly what. Return from all the constitutional officers and what the balance of our funding in is our reserve for capital improvement. So you don't have to make a decision tonight.
We can't, but in November you will have a confirmed number where we can work.
It should be close.
If we had additional money, and it was, look, I'm not over going past the 1,000. So if we had additional money, it wouldn't affect my decision. Follow the same. The balance of this money would be put in our capital improvement fund.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Can I ask a question? So you're telling me the employees have not had a raise in 3 years?
2 years.
2 years? And the only opportunity that they would get a raise again would be on the new budget next year?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's another year, that's 3 years.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I would vote for the 1,500.
That's my proposal. You and I are thinking more and more alike.
Huh?
I said you and I are thinking more and more alike.
We agree on something right
now. We agree on something right here.
Write it down. Do it over a 3 year period. They don't make a whole lot of money, a lot of them don't. Divide that over a 3 year period. That's going to give them a hand up. They deserve it. The majority of them deserve. There are some that don't need to be there, but I've watched some people out there in mud holes, in ditches, busting their hindies, and doing it for each and every one of us in this room.
Amen.
Okay. I support the same thing, 1,500.
1,500.
If we can afford it.
Yeah.
1,500. 1,500.
We ain't gonna kick it.
1,500.
1,500.
So we
haven't made it. As soon as I receive the go-ahead from finance, okay. I can share with finance the direction, the thinking of the board, then we'll bring it back to the board for a vote, and we'll have some better members from the finance.
Okay.
You know what? And I just want to tell you something. Young Moore just came off a strike. You know, they're giving their employees $11,000.
How much?
$11,000.
And here we are choking over GM.
Yes.
GM. Yeah.
Of course, those truck costs $60,000. No one would say.
Okay, number five.
GM went bankrupt. Their stocks went down to zero, and then they restarted again.
Yeah.
So, watch out.
Number five, the board should continue discussion of draft speed hump policy.
I ask that this be put on the agenda because the folks that are a lady from Frank Turner Road, and I met this week another lady that I know very well who lives on that road, and she says, and there's probably no speeder there. My thought would be if we had a policy in a residential district, not on a collector road, and you wanted to pay for your speed bump, and if none of your neighbors complained about it, I wouldn't have any opposition to that. But no, if you got to go do a study and it got to be 85% or better if people don't speed, it's too complicated for me.
And I talked with the, I had a little bit different view, but we'll be friends with you.
We are.
Just set the stage. I've given this a lot of thought, and I did talk with the sheriff today, and the sheriff said that he can set up his equipment, and that he can give us all kinds of data. How many cars is on the road, how fast they're going, what percentage are exceeding the speed limit, and so on and so forth. So, to back up a little bit, I'm thinking, okay, if someone in a neighborhood, and I think you should have, my opinion is that I think you should have at least 60% of the people in that neighborhood or road that would agree. That's kind of like it takes 60% for a constitutional amendment, and 60% just seems like
a fair number.
You know,
I'm thinking about a higher percentage. And 65?
It was at 100% at one time, which I think is outrageous.
Now, the sheriff's piece of equipment right now is broken.
But it's fixed.
It's fixed now.
I talked to you today. But, you know, I thought if somebody wants to put in speed humps, which humps are different than bumps. Humps
are
they're more expensive, but they're more effective. The bumps, the little bumps, they're noisy. They can be pulled up by people that don't like them, but they're less expensive. But if someone wanted to take their money and pay for humps, then we would never say no, you can't do that, as long as we've got 60%, if that's what everybody agrees on, agreement with their people. But then I think about, you've got other areas, each one of us has areas where we have speeding problems. I've had a lot of calls, I know y'all have too, about areas with speeding. And a lot of those areas, those people would never have the money to get together and pay for speed humps, because it wouldn't be one speed hump. Typically, it's going to be a series of speed humps. And then, I guess, you know, I could have the argument if I was somebody like that and said, well, you know, I already pay taxes to be protected. I pay taxes so that my family is safe, so why should I have to pay for it? Which I think will be a good argument. And so then I'm thinking, well, we couldn't afford to pay 100%, I don't think, of all the humps if you establish some pretty good criteria. But if we, maybe they pay half and we pay half or something like that.
That would be a good compromise.
But you know, I think that you to set your criteria, I think you've got to have some, I think you've got to have set criteria, because say for instance, in some of these areas, if you've got 50 cars, say the sheriff put his equipment down and you've got 50 cars, and you've got 5 cars that are speeding, does that warrant humps? And of those 5 that are speeding, are they 5 miles over the speed limit, or are they 15 or 20 miles over the speed limit?
Or one citizen is going down the street 5 times. You know, that's something.
And like when I talked to the sheriff, they said, well, if you've got an area where you've got low traffic, but you've got, say, 1 or 2 offenders, then he said, we can go out there and try to take care of that. But I don't know. If people want to Bob and Ron, I'm just thinking about the people that camp, that need them just as much. Kids with bicycles, kids out playing.
I didn't think about the fact that there'd be some people who could not afford it. I was trying to make not affect our budgeting process.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're 60%, we have to send them that notice. 60% of the residents on that street, we have to agree to it. And then somehow they got to come up with 50% of the money.
Need somebody to enforce the speed and all, that's too much to go.
About the road that's been a thorn in my side, and they have taken extra effort to go out there. And I don't know if they've ever touched base with this lady.
They had gone way better from up to come by here and pass my speed.
Yeah. And so I thought maybe we leave the speed up policy alone if y'all want to pursue it anymore. I think right now we're probably just going to leave it like this. No policy.
Well,
what do you think?
I'm sitting quite cheery, but I think we need to put a lot of thought in it and get a data from the sheriff. And if we decide we want to start, we have to have our
work. Mr. Conrad can straighten y'all out on these speed bump business. Last time this was brought up, remember when they had the lawsuit live up about the speed bump?
Somebody fell on a hospital bed.
If you got somebody, we spent half the money on a speed bump and the community spent half and then somebody hit it with a motorcycle and got killed, they'd be suing the county and the individual.
That's right.
It wouldn't be just, wasn't in that? Everybody sure on the right thing there?
Yeah, you're talking about humps too. Before I would even consider putting humps anywhere, I want to talk to our carrier, our insurance carrier, to see what their position is with regard to speed humps.
Okay.
Because there are lawsuits with regard to, you got to engineer them, you got to put them in right, you know, you got to maintain them, all those kind of things. And how tall are the humps? Now, the last time y'all talked about it, you talked about not necessarily speed bumps or humps, you talked about rumble strips, you know?
Yeah.
The rumble strips, like if you're on 14,
that's right,
and you're turning on 14 to come to Perry, those rumble strips, they're good because number one, they wake you up.
Yeah.
Number two, they're not going to throw you off the road, like for instance a speed hump could throw you off the road. It won't throw you off the road. The rumble strip won't. The only problem with rumble strips is they're noisy. They're noisy, and they'd be noisy for the neighbors. But I just think that before you act with respect to that, you know, do a little bit of study with regard to what the liability is. And of course, you know, it's free to ask your insurance carrier what they think about it.
Yeah, well, in terms of those rumble strips, I don't know, but I would think that they're not designed to slow you down. They're designed to let you know you're fixing to have to stop or you're going to run out of traffic.
Like the dead man's curve.
The ones at dead man's curve. It may work for me, but it does slow me down.
Right, no, but do you want rumble strips in front of your house? I don't want them in front of mine.
I can actually hear that from my house. It don't bother me. I'd rather hear that than hear somebody wrap up in the bushes.
Well, I know that we talked about rumble strips in our neighborhood one time, and everybody there had a fit because they're so noisy, and who wants to be woke up all during the night with rumble strips? But again, you'd have to get 60% of whatever we decided, the people that said, okay, I'm fine with that.
Well, I know more and more cities are pulling away, and they're pulling up actually because of lawsuits. So where you're seeing the speed bumps remain are like on private property or in mall parking lots or gated communities. But outside of that, the majority of the cities are pulling them out.
Okay, well, you know what? I really don't care.
I don't care.
I mean, really, I don't care one way or another. Whatever this board decides and finally.
I don't care.
The county put on the strips in at Keaton Beach, and within a month, the neighbors complain so much about it, can they go back out and take it back out?
That was a wrong.
A few years ago, yeah.
Yeah, see, I don't want those in front of my house down there, but we have a problem in front of my house down to Hodges Park.
Yes.
But I sure don't want our rumble strips there.
So that would be the right way. They come in there, I talked to the engineer on the road department when we first moved here about the traffic coming in there, because in the summertime, they go 55, 60 miles an hour down that straight.
Yes.
And God forbid one of those kids get run over, and that's what I'm waiting on. But they, he told me the same thing, that you would have to buy it yourself, and it was $6,000 to $8,000. But the hump, not the hump, the less noise.
Let Conrad talk to our insurance carrier. Yeah. And then we're going to visit this in a few minutes.
And you're talking about lawsuits. If somebody's child got run over because of speeders going by, you can always say, well, county, you didn't do anything to try to inhibit this. They would sue.
The county would come out and install a bunch more speed limit signs, children at play signs, no litter signs. It doesn't slow them down, they don't make signs, they're going too fast.
You have to have law enforcement. That's the ticket. Got to have law enforcement present. You can put all the signs, all the speed bumps, all the traps, cameras, you can put it all up there. If they don't see a badge standing there, they're not going to care.
Well, the thing is, and I've called them many times about several roads in my district, and they can't sit on ABC Road every day.
Understood.
And they can sit there a day or two, and the people slow down, and the minute they leave,
yep,
right, they speed up. And then how many roads have all of us got that would like to have a deputy on? We don't have that many deputies that can stay on these roads every day. So they do the best they can. It's not real effective, and they know that. But they just can't sit on the road forever.
But they do have data compilation through the machinery where they put the camera up and they can see how many, when. Like our issue with Keaton Beach is in our season, in our tourist season.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we have that, all of a sudden, the voluminous amount of people all in one place at one time, and there's where our issues are coming from. And I'm sure that trickles down into the other districts as well. Y'all see the impact on the roads when the seasons are on, fishing season, scallop season. But I believe if people were aware, if they knew, like Sundays, on Sundays, don't speed on Beach Road. Why is that? It's because the highway patrol is always on Beach Road on Sundays. So for 13 years, I'm always looking for a highway patrolman, and he's somewhere on that road every Sunday for 13 years. So if the people know that there's a presence there, I'm going to speed down those roads.
Well, the sheriff can put that thing out anywhere and give you all kind of data.
Right.
You know, what the average speed is, how many cars. So I don't care, whatever y'all want to do.
Let's give it a little more study. Let Mr. Bishop have an opportunity to talk to our insurance carriers. And I'm not you. Whatever the you four will do, I'm willing to play ball.
So we can bring it back in November?
Bring it back. We need to workshop this one more time. And it ought to be reasonable, and it ought to be tied to everybody, or at least 60% of the people along that road have got to agree to it. The only thing I'm choking on now is that the county's going to have to pay for it. 50%, I can deal with that.
But you have to have some pretty strict criteria for that to happen.
For that to happen, right.
Can you not do a special assessment in that district or that subdivision or whatever to the property owners?
Well, you could. I mean,
they the citizens on that road.
If they want to vote for it, then if all the people in like Cedar Island, they, you have to have 60% or more, and then it would be a special assessment number.
Yeah, we have to fund that, and then that money just trickles in, and it may over. Does it pull that money over many years?
Well, you said that for years.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we get all this extra money in, like we're talking about for employee incentives and everything, why can't we use some of that money for public safety?
Over in Wauwatosa County, I know there's a road and a subdivision, kind of like yours. They go down the road and then they got a circle. They have to circle around an island in the middle. Come up here, They kind of reflect their vision, they got a flower bed built in midst of it, and they don't make a, you know, a two-sided circle, but it comes up and it just kind of ovals around that thing.
I like those.
And it slows everybody down.
It does.
It's right there at Keys Beach, you had three of them between Hodges Park and the Corner Shores, it makes a big difference.
But you're gonna infringe on somebody's property, I don't know if you're just with the right of way on each side.
You have enough right of way. You got enough right of way there to do that, probably, I would think. But on, and Keys Beach.
Keys Beach, you could put a little oval, put your time out of there or something.
Yeah, that's what they do, they come up there and they, you have to slow down, but it, you know, you have to go around.
So can we take some of the money that's given back to us and use it for public safety?
I don't know, Miss Annie Mae, if we use general fund money for something that would typically be funded with gas tax funds?
I don't know, because the debt road stuff, you need funding by gas tax.
Can we use that for public safety?
I doubt it.
Can we use our, say, in our road department, and then when the road department runs out of money next July, then you pull that out of the general fund and replenish their,
And one reason for that is because the city gets their part of the gas tax and the county gets their part.
Right.
I doubt you can do that. You can't transfer from the general to the road bridge.
Okay, what about out of the sale of the hospital?
Miss Annie Mae, is that set up in a reserve in the general fund?
Yeah, but it's set up as in a special account. We did that so that we could be controlled.
Because, you know, people are going to have their hands up for that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good discussion.
Number six, the board should continue discussion of draft 5-year capital improvement plan.
We originally discussed this back in February, and what we've done is gone back to our department heads several times and asked them to really look ahead, you know, for 5 years. Fiscal year 2020 has already been approved and funded. And so what's important to remember about the capital improvement plan is that in order to obtain maximum, maximum points for some of our grants, we should have an approved capital improvement plan. What I would like, this is a lot of information, it's a lot of numbers. What I would ask the board to do is to spend some time going through this, ask me any questions, okay, provide any feedback, and then possibly bring this back in November. We would ask for a vote at the December meeting. We have to have this approved prior to submitting grant application for the grant that we would be pursuing for renovation and improvements to Hodges Park. We have included the 25% of the 1 cent sales tax obligation in these numbers, and we have designated whether it's local funding or outside funding. So the first thing we would need to do is to add the Hodges Park improvements and all the other projects that the board just discussed. So this actually will change again. And just for the board's information, every budget work session, we would basically reapprove the capital for that year. So this is just a plan. This is just a look ahead for 5 years. And we've really discussed with all the department heads to really reflect upon what we may need. This is an absolute, and I have asked them to estimate higher rather than lower. What we don't want to do is to ask for funding and then realize we don't have enough. We don't have enough to fund a purchase of a new vehicle or to do some of the projects that we have in mind.
Now, when this was put together, is this legitimate needs and not wants and would like to have, but this is needs.
That is my understanding that this is needs. And we've, but that being said, we've asked every department head to forecast what they think they may need. So I would say every budget year, if we realize we don't need another vehicle, we can, you know, that's something that we can change. This is really, I would say, a working document that can be changed every year. And that's really the purpose of it.
No. I read through this not as thoroughly as I will, but this is a plan, as you said, and plans can change.
Mm-hmm.
And next budget cycle, we may have some more important questions.
Sure.
There's one or two things there that jumped out at me, and I said I just have some explanation. Like, I spent $250,000 on a front end loader for solid waste. Do they need a front end loader at all?
Well, I would
do. $250,000 front end loader, that's a big piece of equipment.
Yes, sir. And it may be that when we get to that point, we can lease it.
We have a right to change this.
Absolutely,
if we're going
on. Absolutely. And
what is F-350 at one time, the biggest truck you can find?
Well, that's good. You got that.
That's the load of the incinerator, isn't it?
No, sir, we use a tractor for that.
Huh?
I believe we use a tractor for that.
Is it fixed yet?
It should be, no. We test drove it, and it was not, we ended up leaving it there.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. And we call about every other day and ask, are we done yet? Are we done yet?
We got that tractor. Up in that?
Long as we have one of the big ticket items are coming back, we're bored with a lot of having problems playing. And appreciate the hard work somebody did.
Marsha worked very hard on this. Our department heads worked very hard on it. And I will say, there was a little bit of trepidation because when I told them, you know, you don't want to underestimate. And we really need you to look ahead for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I believe they all understand that this is needs.
It's food.
Yes, absolutely.
Well,
yes.
This is good, and I'm very appreciative of this. This is something that I have asked for, beginning with Jack Brown, Dustin Hinkle, Ted Lecce, and now it took this long to get this document, and I'm just really pleased that you put this together. It looks like a good job. Thank you.
Thank you. And what do we have to do to approve this? With the caveats, we have the right.
Absolutely. And if you have any questions, please reach out to us. I mean, we've tried to double check numbers, but I mean, it's also possible that we're off on numbers or that we won't need a front end loader when the time comes around. Something else may come up, obviously, in the next 4 years.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Number 7, board to discuss the master project list.
We have some additional information for you that we neglected to print out. I apologize. We wanted to give you another working document that shows not only what we have on our list, but what we've accomplished in the last year. And so we will provide these to you as well, just for the board's information. But as far as the, so on the ordinances and resolutions, we have two pending. We have the no tobacco vaping ordinance that we are getting ready to advertise, and the resolution of intent for solid waste assessment that we will advertise after tonight's special meeting. And as far as the master project list goes, do you want me to go through every project? I'll be happy to, whatever the board wishes.
All of these projects have been completed.
Yes, ma'am.
Or almost, well, not all of them.
On the
ordinance and resolution?
This list.
Yeah, I'm looking at the master project list, is that what you're looking at?
So this document here shows all of our open, uncompleted projects.
Okay, I don't have that.
One you don't have.
I've got these two, but I don't have the ones that you're working on. Yeah, that.
Yeah, the ordinance.
Yeah.
At least so you can look at it.
Are they done with Harrison, do you?
No, we don't have quite on the middle. We couldn't get the middle this week.
So next week?
Next week, we're going to get the middle, and we're going to tear up the yard.
I give them that.
All the leaves, to get the middle, you know, right, and.
And you should be obtaining quotes for the fencing.
Right. Milling and fencing. We hope to get some reimbursement from the insurance, it's not like we're out of the fence, other than.
So on Hampton Springs.
Yes, ma'am.
When is the projected complete date?
I am, was told today that we still feel like we can finish the end of December. The electrical contractor started digging the trench yesterday, from what I understand, and pulling the wire. The plumbing should be, the pipe should be put in next week. We have issued the purchase order for the grinder pump. And after all of that, we'll have to do some work on the electrical pedestal and maybe some cleanup. But I was told today that we're still shooting for the end of December.
Now, that electrical contractor is A-OK? They would dig the trench and run the wire cheaper than the power company?
That was my understanding.
My county shop, that's a little early.
Well, maybe because it will be underground instead of overhead.
They have underground rates.
Well, and what we wanted to do at the same time was have our inmate squad work on running the water and the sewer and the electrical at the same time is what we're trying to get done. So we're using our inmate squad for part of that. We have a list of repairs that need to be made at Hampton Springs. I've got that list, I believe, late last week, of repairs that we need to make there.
Yeah, what I'd like to see is when we have a project like this, that we have a schedule. And the schedule says during this time, this will be done, and then this will be done, and this will be done. And at the end of the year, it says it's going to be completed.
Time.
Every time we have a project.
Tell my timeline.
Yeah. And that way, it doesn't go on for 2 years. So you have a long extent. Seems like a very long time. But if you've got that schedule, then everybody knows the expectation and we kind of know what's going on with it. If for some reason you can't meet that schedule, then tell us why. What's going on? Why you can't meet it? But just to have a project, we're going to do this. And sometime later, we're still, you know, it needs to be specific.
I think what happened when we first put this list together is we tried to gather all the information we could so we wouldn't forget. We have this, we have this, we have this, we have this. And then we prioritize as we've moved along or as our inmate squad becomes available. And I think that we prioritize it by need. I understand what you're saying about the schedule, but I think that we knew from the very beginning that some of these schedules, it may be a whole year before we even look at it. And that was...
See, I sure didn't understand that. Did anybody else understand that? Jim, did you understand that?
No.
That wasn't made clear to us.
If it's going to be a whole year, just tell us up front. We'll give you rationale. You know why it's going to take so long.
I would say this is, we'll do better. This is a work in progress, and we have tried to include more information and have a better idea of the date. But, you know, I would say we started from scratch and just kind of threw it all in.
And in fairness to you, this project was started before you took the position that you've got. And I know that it drug along and did not move the way it should have prior to you. So I understand that you came into a lot of scenarios like that. But from where it's a new day. It's a new day in county government. So from here on, we can perhaps, we'll make schedules and we will be privy to, you know, this is how long it's going to take. And then our expectation is not one thing, but reality is another, you know.
I understand. And we will do better. We'll do a better job with that. And trying, now, another, something we added to this, just so everyone is on the same page, is to note which projects aren't funded. Because there are some projects on this list that we have not identified a funding source. And that way, there's not an unclear expectation, because it may take us 6 months to figure out how to fund this project, or it could have been started in a different budget year, and we don't have the funding for it this year. So some of these projects, I will have to come back to the board and say, we had no idea how much this was going to cost. It's not funded. Now we know how much it's going to cost, and board, will you fund it? So we have, we will identify those projects as well and do a better job with that.
I don't have any questions. Does anybody else have any questions about this?
Now, the Sparks Capitol Hall roof repair.
Yes.
That's just put new screws up there in the roof? Or?
Not as my understanding, but our engineer actually, they took another look at the roof, you know, again, to make sure that we know exactly what we need. And he's working on a scope of work so we can start obtaining quotes. And that project in particular, when it first started, it's kind of evolved. And that's happened with several of our projects. We'll think, okay, this is what we need to do. But then as we dig into the project, unexpected cost or an unexpected scope, there was an assumption with that particular project that our paid inmate work squad could do this work for us. Well, when I asked for DOC to approve that, they said, absolutely not. So that's now it becomes something totally different. But I don't think we need to, maybe before we put projects on the list moving forward, we need to do all the research first.
And everyone else fits in the set.
But as you said, this is something that, you know, we've inherited, and so now we're just trying to work through all of these issues. But I would say that sometimes I think we overcommit and to say, yes, we'll be happy to do that, and we don't realize what we're committing to. And we have several projects that have taken that direction.
And not only that, is at times I've thought we have too many projects at one time. Now, you've got this project, finish this project, and then start on this one. And I don't know if that's the best way to do it. I mean, it seems like it is, but maybe in the scheme of things here, that may not be the best way. But it does seem like too many projects and not enough. And I know Kenneth is our only engineer, and of course, we do outsource some of that,
right? Right. But typically, I think what's happened in the past is we've said, of course we can do that without communicating. Now it's going to take 2 years before we're freed up to do this. Or we don't know how much it's going to cost. Let us find that out. I think we ran into that with Angel Springs. We did not realize what we were committing to. So I think that when we have a conceptual project, that maybe we should not put it on the list until we know exactly what we're committed to.
We need to know more, because another example was the Shenandoah Community Center. We allocated this much money, not having any idea in the world how much it was going to cost. We didn't have a design, we didn't have anything. It was like, oh, here's X number of dollars, and you couldn't do it for that. And that's why I'm on the Hodges Park project, that I want to just do a design, and then let's get a number to it, and then add a percentage on top of that, because, you know, things always come up unexpected or whatever. But I think that's a prudent way to do all the projects.
I think that we just, maybe we don't want to forget that a commissioner or a group has asked for something, so we put it on the list, and then as, you know, as time goes on, then it becomes very painful for all of us, because mm-hmm. it appears that we're not diligent, that it's, I don't think it's that, I think it's that we haven't planned thoroughly, and we don't know the cost, and we haven't allocated the resources. And
that's right.
These things just have a tendency to just become an issue. Now, something that, and there are projects that never did make the list, like painting at the complex. That's not even on the list, but we're working on that concurrently. So we will continue to do a better job.
Can we get a good bid on that, Ms. Christian?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we
and that's been funded by us. It's in the budget.
It is in the budget, but I will say that project was in two pieces and has been a little difficult to work out because of the timing of it. But the repair and painting of the windows, I've submitted to the Historical Society to see if we could obtain reimbursement. So we did receive 50% reimbursement from the Dream Grant funding for the awnings at the courthouse. I expect to receive reimbursement for the painting of the windows, and then once the painting of the building itself has been completed, I will submit that for reimbursement. So,
good thinking. I wouldn't have thought of that.
I'm always looking for money.
Well, I've had a painter on the payroll because I'm about bankrupt. That's a slow process.
Very frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Well, I don't know if anyone noticed, but our parking, the wall for the public parking, we have several colors that we put up because the colors that we've chosen, everything turns gray for some reason. So we're still trying to pick the best color.
I'm colorblind. Can't help it. Sorry.
But everyone else isn't. we're trying. We're hoping that we can land on the color that we want for the building. We were shooting for something neutral, and then we should have the. Hopefully, we'll have the building painted soon, and it will be nice.
I thought got a pretty good. Had two bids. The lowest one I thought was pretty reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Anything that the Historical Society building is a bad, how's it involved with that door? It needs some work. Is that, I know it's a county building. Is anything in the plans?
That's in the CIP to paint. I can't remember which year.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. We put that. And again, that's the forward thinking I asked for. And so it really, I think, opened the department head's eyes to things that we need to have done.
Did we ever get the roof fixed over there in the Historical Society building? Yes. It doesn't leak anymore?
No, we actually we contracted that out.
I keep finding it.
Okay.
And then we also painted safety lines. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, we did a lot of windows. We had people fall.
Right. So we got that done.
Got that.
Yes.
Do you want to fall?
Thank you.
You don't burn out. I'll leave you safe for a while.
Okay.
Thank you, Carl.
Number 8, Victor Blomholm, Marine Agent, to discuss county fisheries management and a concept proposal for the Taylor County Coastal Center.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you. First. I'm going to try to go through, I have a couple of presentations, and I will just try to go real quick through all that, and we can open the discussion if you have any questions or comments. Thank you. So, the whole idea, Okay, So I'm not going to explain what management is, because that's what basically you do all the time. But in fisheries management, that is the process that comes from gathering the information, analyzing the information, making a decision, consulting, and then it will all come into a resolution. And that resolution, which is the instrument, the final instrument of management, it has the purpose of to govern the fishery, to continue the productivity of the resource. So at the end, what we want is to have access to the resource in a long term. Maybe this is a little bit small, but what it says is in U.S., the fisheries management is based under the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and it's based on three pillars. So the first one is science. Of course, we need science to collect the data and to make the data robust enough to make decisions. Then we have management itself, which is the process of discussion, analytics, and making a final decision. And then we have, of course, the enforcement. To do that, and all these processes are, the system is designed to prevent three main things. First, avoid overfishing of the stock. Second, if the stock is overfished, then quickly stop the overfishing. And then if it's too late, if we come too late on the resource, then we use those instruments and we use the system to restore the resource to a previous state. Well, that's what it's supposed to do. To do that, fisheries are basically work in geographic areas. And these geographic areas is what they call the regional fishery management councils. In our case, it's the Gulf Council that we are attached to. And they develop management plans for the region for different groups of species. Or at least what they try is to provide some guidelines so the whole region, the different states, try to address the management in the same way. So fisheries management, do you have a pointer here? Is this one? Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
I read that one. Okay.
I think there is some topic.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry. So, fisheries management involves different groups, and of course, each group will have a different interest on how they perceive how the fisheries needs to be managed. And well, that's the way it is handled everywhere. But at the end, what we want to do is to have a range. We have different indicators, even if it's biological or the operation of the fisheries, the socio-economical aspects involved, how many jobs, the revenue the fishermen make, or the economics, the fluctuation in the price of the products, of the fish itself, or the seafood itself. So managers try to establish a range, and the decisions are made in base that that indicator fluctuates between those range that make the whole system work. So, and we come at the end when we're discussing specific species to the famous fish stock assessment. Everybody, when we go to all these meetings that discuss regulation on a species, there's always this term, fish stock assessment. What happened? So, what is exactly a stock assessment? And this is important to try to understand a little bit, because sometimes our logic let us assume what the definition is. But it doesn't exactly mean that the scientists or the managers have the same concept as other people, right? So we want everybody to be on the same page. when it comes to understand what a fish stop assessment is. So basically what we try to do is to find answer to different questions like what the target harvest rates, bed balance, resource conservation and use. So we want to know what's the size of the population, and then how much do we take out of the population and make sure that the fishermen are doing great, but the population is doing good too. Has a sub decline into our fish condition? Does a sub risk and harvest rate exceed sustainable levels? So these are terms that in general the managers use. And what they use to at the end make what they call a stock assessment is a mathematical model. It's a program in the computer that you put all kind of information in, and then information comes first from the catch. So what fishermen report as their catch, that's one of the data that goes into that model. And then we have the biology, which is the agency goes out, or researchers go out, and they collect their own information on the species, and they use like mortality, when they reproduce, how the fertility, how many eggs did they lay, how fertile they are, in which areas, how do they, where do they spawn, and all these kind of factors that are very important for the life cycle of the species. And then, of course, what we need to do is to get an cycle of the abundance. To do that, depending on the species, for example, in the scouts, what the researchers do is they have a transect, or they have a statistic select number of spots where they go and they collect their information. For older species, some sheep just go and they use ecosound to collect the biomass that is available in the water. So, and they process all this information together. So these three sources of information is poured into these models, and the model comes out with a number. Basically, this is the same. So that number is what said, okay, the population is doing good, or the population is not doing too good, or we see this fluctuation, and so we need to make a decision to control. And when you control, in a fishery, you can control the number of fishermen, the fishing gear they use, where they go fishing, the season, if there's a season, the size of the animal. So there's a lot of aspects that also can be regulated. In the last, I would say the last decade or so, the approach for fisheries management has turned to what they call the ecosystem-based fisheries management. And that's, before, we just thought of the fish like an individual, it was along there in the ocean, and we're just collecting that. And then some, over time, with some fisheries collapse, scientists realized that if you remove part of that, of those fish are part of a network. They're eaten by someone, or they eat someone, or they occupy a space into an ecosystem. So if we remove them, who takes that space, what impact that might have in the ecosystem as well. So here we just have different how this network works. It's very complex. And the bottom of it is that this is so dynamic that it's pretty much impossible to really collect information on all the parameters and to have a series of data along the time that will let us know how really everything is working. Because this is so, so dynamic. So they collect information on climate, all the geophysical aspects, water quality, and then we collect information. information on the fishing itself, and then we have socioeconomic aspects. All of those information is coming into the management to make management actions, and then all these aspects try to be considered. Well, this is pretty much the same, it's just small, I'm just going to skip that. So what's been happening in Taylor County? We have two groups of fisheries, everybody knows that. We have the recreational fisheries, but with the very important target species like scallops, the trout, the red rum, cobias, gag groupers, and that fisheries is in shore and offshore. And then we have some commercial fisheries also that targets stone crab, blue crabs, we have some shrimpers, and of course some other species that are related to, or do they share the same ecosystem and the same areas as some of the targeted species. So recently we went, pretty much all of you assist to, for example, one of the meetings in Steinhatchee, where the commercial fishermen were talking about the stone crabbing, and that's something that is really important. But what I wanted to address is that those changes in regulation that been happening, that's going to continue happening in the coming years. So we have to be prepared for that and try to understand that for some species, these fluctuations are in a time series. It can be 10 years, 20 years, 5 years, 2 years, it's very difficult to really understand. We don't have a long database that gives us a pretty much good view of what's exactly going on. This year we have been dealing with scallops, trout, and stone crab, and the bycatch, especially the black bass. But the keyword of all that is uncertainty. So we will always, even if this information, this stock assessment that the scientists come in front of the commissioners, FWC commissioners, and why do FWC commissioners take right away what people come and say? It's because they know there's even a lot of uncertainty in the scientific information that they receive. So, at the end, the public is a really important source of information as well to make decisions. Especially here in Taylor County, I think that we're very blessed that we pretty much our whole coast is protected. We have a very good water quality. We don't have big cities on the coast that are really like polluting the water. The Big Bend Sea Grass Aquatic Preserve is there. It provides a great habitat for all most of our species. So we're in a really, really good position if you see it from the ecological or biological point of view, which is my background. But also when you hear what the fishermen say, you know that the situation is good. Yeah, every day I see, I follow a lot of captains, charter captains, that every day on a daily basis they just post pictures and pictures and pictures and pictures of all what they get. And when I talk to them, pretty much they say, and we have to release, I don't know, how many fish back in the water. So that's a good indicator that the situation is good. I was trained that, when there was a lot of uncertainty, I had to follow the breakout scenario approach on fisheries management. That was a previous one. And that approach, what says is that in the scenario of a lack of information, you always take a decision to protect the resource first. I don't think that's the case we have here in Taylor County. Everybody's, and I'm pretty happy about that, a lot of the people in the coast is really aware of how important our coastal resources are. So that's a great thing. And they want to pursue a way to make sure the population remains healthy during time. And this statement connects with my following presentation. But I'm going to go there in a minute. So, for example, in the stone crab case study, there are different aspects that we need to consider. Some legal aspects, when they were discussing exactly what is a target species. If the fishery is targeting, it says that I'm going out fishing to get this resource, to get the stone crab in this case. But as the fishing gear that they use, they're not specific for one species, other species can get caught, right? And that's what they call bad catch, it's incidental catch. So if they go out there to get a stone crab and they get serious stone crab, but they get 1,000 pounds of black sea bass, then you, as a manager, you ask yourself, like, okay, are they really targeting the stone crab or targeting the black sea bass? And this is something that maybe needs more discussion. I think this is a really important topic. And then we have the economic aspects. The fleet operation cost is not the same 24 foot, 200 traps, one crew that fish inshore than a vessel that is 46, has 800 traps, three crews, and go offshore. So the cost, of course, is going to be very different in these two boats. And that's what we saw. That's why we heard during that presentation, some people say, oh yeah, I think with 300 pounds of black sea bass will cover us. And then 500, and then 800, 900, 1100, 1500. So what, and that may be because of that, of the real concept of what the operational units, fishing units is. Then we have, of course, bioecological aspects like the interaction with other species. The stone crab, gat groupers, and black sea bass, they share exactly the same areas. So where you go targeting one, you will find the other two. And there are scientific information on that. And then we have the social aspect. How many jobs and how many people live out of this? If they don't go out fishing, how many families are going to be affected? And I wanted to show these three graphs is the landings, commercial landings for octopus, stone crab, and black sea bass. And this is official data from FWC. And we see that the fluctuations on peaks. And for example, here we see a peak of octopus, and then we see that the stone crab decreased. And that's logic because the octopus come into the traps to prey on the stone crabs. But when we see this decrease in black sea bass, for example, do we say are they really not catching enough black sea bass, or maybe they are landing their catch somewhere else? So there's a still, and I go back to the same term, uncertainty of this. I think that the board is doing a great job to try to balance the needs of our residents to protect their businesses, but at the same time showing some concern about how important the preservation of the resources are. So I applaud, I'm here as a resource. For me, it's very difficult because I cannot advocate in favor or against one of the other things, but I will try to bring the information. As I said, fisheries management is like a negotiation. You have to go to the table with something that you want to trade. Okay, I give you this and I get this back. So I'm satisfied, and the regulatory agency is satisfied as well. So I think that's a great way that we can address that. I wonder if you have any questions.
I do. I'm thinking about skunks, and you know, for the past couple of 3 years, I don't know how many, we've had the business people that have come in and wanted to open up skunk season early. And then you have others that say, well, gathering scallops that are too small, and it's going to wipe out the population. And I just wonder, you know, when they go to these meetings and you have all the businesses that are advocating to open the season early, the decision makers, how much are they influenced by the pressure from the business people versus the scientific facts?
Good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, this year I was very surprised. I think I put that on your package. I include three slides related to scallops. I'm sorry, I didn't include them in the presentation here. But June 14, we usually before the opening of the scallop season, we have a seminar, and we bring Dr. Steve Geiger, which is the main researcher of FUC for scallop. He's been studying scallops for 20 years. So when he showed his information of the counts, pre-season counts, the last 3 years, the amount of the abundance of scallops have been increasing.
Yes, we see that.
Yeah. And my last question before we close was to him. I said, so we need to get prepared as a community to address a potential breakdown of our population? And I was expecting him saying yes. Mm-hmm. And he said, no. Really? Yeah, I was really impressed. And he said, what I'm seeing here is that the scallops have a fluctuation cycle that is about 8 years. Mm. So we're possibly going to go to the last lower abundance in the cycle, and then the following years are going to be really good. And then it was another graph. The monitoring that FBC did last year, yes. And that really is the same, they got the same results as I did in 2017 during my scallop monitoring, which is like, we see the fluctuation of the landings of scallops goes from very high, bottom, peak, bottom, peak, bottom, peak. Each peak is at a weekend. And then the landings, of course, drops during weekdays. But also the peaks start at the beginning of the season, it's really high, and then at the end it's really low. So the higher pressure on the resource, I would say, is the 2-3 first weeks, no more than 4 weeks. It's only on the weekends. And then it really drops dramatically. And the other number that she estimated was the number of scallops that are really taken out of of the water. And it was about 15 million scallops removed during the scallop season.
In what area?
In here in
Taylor County,
yes. Their estimation is about 15 million scallops removed out of the water.
Wow.
That sounds like a lot, but let's remember that the fertility is really high. Even though there is a big mortality during early stages, it seems like the population is still doing good. So if we can move to continue talking on that to the next presentation. So in the almost 3 years that I've been here, it's been a concern, and we have discussed that. I think last year I prepared a grant proposal to purchase a piece of land to support aquaculture and fisheries, and at the end we dismissed that, the board dismissed that. And I shared the same information this year with the Chamber of Commerce in Skinhatchee, and they really want to do something to make sure that the scallop population stays healthy. They want a hatchery or a nursery that can restock scallops in our area. But from my experience, usually if you address one of these topics from only one perspective, sometimes it's really difficult to, you know, to make it a win. In the past few years, I've worked with a couple of potential investors that are interested in installing a hatchery for shellfish hatchery, and it's been difficult. So what I thought is that here in Taylor County, considering our economics, most of the coastal activities are important economic drivers in the county, especially in the coast. I mean fisheries mainly. Okay. The region in general, and I mean from Pasco all the way to the Panhandle, is really competitive to bring people into their areas. Not only if people like to go fishing, but also, you know, enjoy sandy beaches, and they have other alternatives besides that, especially if they go with the family. And what I saw is that people that, for example, come scalloping, they might go, if they don't bring their own boat, they might rent a boat one or maybe twice, but they spend the whole week here, at least 4 or 5 days. So what did they do the other days? What do we have to offer for people to stay here? So as I earlier mentioned, we have most of our coast is protected, and we have wonderful conditions and a wonderful landscape to show. And the same hatchery functions as one of the dynamic center of the marine coastal of the county. Pretty much all that happens, economically speaking, is in steam hatching. And I provide you with another report that is a report that shows in the maps where the people is coming from to Taylor when they come fishing. Mm-hmm. And you can even see if they come, for example, to target trout, where they are coming from. And what we see is that people from Perry and Georgia, they go to Keaton Beach. And people from Gainesville go directly to Steam Hatch. So people from Perry and this another part, we don't go down to Steam Hatch. So it is like they manage like different markets. So what I see is that the county likes a multifunctional center to offer products or services for our coastal visitors. I have been, for example, our last vacation, I went with my family to Denver Coast, and we went to Destin. And they just love it to walk on the beach road, and they love to get, you know, the t-shirts that said Destin, beautiful beaches. And so their brand is a town. The same happened when we went to Washington or when we went to Gatlinburg. You go to these places and they market the place. Mm-hmm. That's their goal. So I think maybe we should envision somehow something like that and use the coastal resources as a way to address that.
Have you talked to the chamber?
Yes.
This here.
Yes, I have discussions with Don and with Mrs. Wessels down in Steam Hatch as well. And I know that there's a lot that they're doing, but there's a lot more that can be done. So economically speaking, I think maybe you have seen this slide before. We have estimated the scallop season brings about 4.5 million. That's our estimation. Other people say about 10 million. It's hard to exactly address. Artificial reef, about 5.5 million. since it was installed. Recreational fishery is about 50 million. All these numbers are really conservative, I think. Commercial fishery is about 2 million a year. The economic impact of boating activities is around 11 million. And approximately 15% of labor is associated with coastal activities and businesses. So there is still a lot that can be offered to create new jobs and new ways of living. I really like your vision of working, for example, in a boat ramp in Spring Warrior, and you know, diversify the areas where people can really go and have access to lower cost of resources. So this is just a concept. This is an idea, okay? How I see it is this coastal center is a self-sustained multifunctional facility that might have a shellfish seed production, which might be run commercially operated or leased to produce not only shellfish but other products like oysters or clams for the industry around here. Then I wrote like thanks for fish restocking. Some people ask me that, why don't we restock trout or red drum, or even some people say snook. Okay. This is something that might be done, but I think it's very difficult to do it at first. It's better to start small and then grow. Then a permanent educational or informational display. We have placed a lot of signs in the boat ramps, but are really those signs can be making their accomplishing what they are there for? I'm not sure. So, but if we have them in a place where it's more accessible to people, I think that would make a better impact. A concession area, souvenir store, and then restaurant, of course, restroom and parking. So if we go to that place, we will be able, the visitors and residents will be able to visit a shellfish hatchery with tanks, and then a visitor center where they will see for example, red drums and trout, and talk about our nature coast. They might be able to buy, purchase souvenirs while they're after they're drinking something in a concession area, or buying whatever they want, groceries or whatever. And where is the best place? So we have tried to, maybe when we were preparing the proposals to purchase the land, that was in very isolated areas. But we have a great, the county has a great asset, which is these properties right here in front of the boat ramp that are now inoperative. So what if we find a way to use that lot of land for different activities that can bring, not only provide services and products to the visitors, but also to provide revenue for income to the county. And for example, we already have like a parking space, we have the restrooms, and let's just like envision if we have a visitor center here where it's just a display from FWC, the Department of Environmental Protection, NOAA, FEMA, you know, and then just showing different aspects that are really important in our region. And then, of course, in the aquatic production space, and then we have the concession area. This is just a bunch of ideas that I throw out there. So I'm going to skip this. This is just a... but what do we need? The first thing, of course, is to build partnership. As I said, it's very hard to accomplish this if the county wants to go alone on this journey. The best way, and that way we can leverage funding if we bring in the table And I know there are resources, at least FDC, NOAA, EP, I know they have resources for example, for displays of educational and informational things. And I know if we come out and say, hey, we have this this property in front of the boat ramp and we want to do open a bidding for a leasing, I'm pretty sure a lot of businesses will be really interested in getting that spot when during summer they have thousands of people, visitors just running right in front of them. So it makes it really attractive for private investors, and without a private investor, this is going to be very difficult as well. And then, of course, we will have the Chamber of Commerce, which really know how to get to the businesses, to the local businesses, and how to support them to get on board. And the University of Florida, of course, at the extension, the Nature Coast Biological Station, the Tropical Aquaculture Lab, which is south of Tampa Bay, and they know a lot about raising scallops, and especially this company, Bay Shellfish. They have all the know-how of how to produce scallop seeds. So if we bring all these people together and we offer something in return, I think at least they will consider the possibility of getting on board. I want to just to discuss the CRP as a case study. They don't have more density than we do. And when you go to Cedar Key, you see the difference. Because they really know how to, yes, I have these lights here. I don't know why I put them here. They were supposed to go to the other one. But I'm just throwing out a bunch of ideas. What will be the way I see other steps, and I already have something before the first one, which is, of course, presenting to you, and make a decision on the viability of this proposal to go or no go to pursue something like this. Is a designated project leader and a project committee to draft a plan of action. As a county staff and as an extension agent, I will be glad to support or lead from the county point of view this thing, but this is something I cannot do by myself. I will need, and that's why I said, well, project committee to bring ideas. And then I came with something else that I have experienced in the past, is that for these kind of concepts, they open a contest. So they say, okay, the county wants to do a coastal center in Steinhatchee, and we offer a contest for proposals of how to address that. And architects, engineers, NGOs, they all come with these amazing ideas of how to deal with that, just at the concept level. And then from there, you can move forward. And that will bring also will give the people the sense that they belong to them as well. So I think it's a good way to win-win for everybody, for the resources, for the county, for Steinhatchee. Sometimes people call me that I'm a dreamer. I prefer be a dreamer than, just do nothing. I love to get in trouble.
You know, I appreciate your enthusiasm with this project, and obviously you've done a lot of work, and it's very interesting. I wish that we could add a little something for Keaton Beach. Having a little place there, and I hear it from people down there, we need something here. We have nothing. You know, we need more in Keaton Beach. And I don't know how, we could incorporate some things there to stimulate maybe some growth. But it's I'm interested. Wallace, what do you think of this?
I think it's a good idea. Not only you gonna bring in the people that you have come in fishing and stalking and all, but you also gonna have schools that wanna come over and be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing around unless you go way over west Florida to some of those Pacific aquatic areas over there. Or you gotta go to the FMU's lab down at the coast.
And
I think Bayer County School, Madison County, Jefferson County, or probably even counties out of Georgia would come down here and take tours and all, which would bring in extra income also. I'd be willing to bring it up at the next Development Authority meeting and talk with our members, and if we can set up a time, maybe Victor can come and present it to the Development Authority and get an insight of what they believe.
Yeah, that was basically why I wanted your input, because I was just hoping that the Development Authority might could latch on to this also.
But, you know, basically, and then we can talk about later, we've been up this area, and we are Taylor County Development Authority.
Right.
So we want to cover and help all the county that we can. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk to them in the next meeting and see what we can line up.
Yeah. I'd be more than glad to come to your board meeting and, you know, present again and just have an open conversation. As I said, this is just a concept idea.
Yeah, maybe you could do a shorter version for the TCDA, because, you know, they're trying to limit it to 1 hour for the whole meeting.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm sure that you could, you know, make
they
it a lot shorter.
They can show us the economic impact and things like that. Mm-hmm. This last section of what she just presented would be really interesting, with, you know, the economic impact. Not like, and I agree with the people that, you know, Sting Hackey's growing. King Beach has a chance to grow if they need something to grow from.
Mm-hmm.
And this, even if it can be an outbranch of something that's at Sting Hackey, you know, aside from how people would have to be, but it's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Or put it in between both of them.
Vic, you might do a handout to give things before you come. This is the third time I've seen this presentation. And you do a good job, and I think you've got a lot of potential to do it for them. Anyway, you do good. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think this also can be attached to, for example, Commissioner Markey was talking to me before. We need to prepare our residents to be more entrepreneurs and create businesses that create jobs and keeps the money flowing in the county. If we prepare a series of, for example, kayaking guides, that area in Town Holloway that you were saying, or in Springwater, or even in Sting Hatchery, they can offer not only just to go out paddling, but just also to teach people about what we have to offer here, what is in the waters, what about our forests. A lot of people, that's a really interesting targeting market for agritourism. It's emerging, yeah.
It is.
So I appreciate you listening to me. And if I can be of any help, I'm more than glad to try to move this forward. Yeah.
Any questions from anybody?
I have a question. You obviously put in a lot of time and effort, and I appreciate you thinking out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
But the property that you identified is across the street from the Sting Hatchey boat ramp, which is my understanding that's already a pretty congested area. So you're not wed to that property, which I think now is used for parking, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a concern I have up front. I don't know if that's the ideal location. County owns it, but if you're going to put in everything you described there, where the folks go park. I mean, that's just a concern.
Yeah.
So then you have a new marina coming in that same area too.
We got 60 acres that's being happy. That would be perfect for what he's talking about.
You know those 50 acres you're talking about?
Yes. That's the one on the street that was?
Yes.
Yeah, I have an idea.
That's really nice property. The concession at the, right there at the boat ramp would be good.
That
sounds really good. But let's
not
forget
Keaton
Beach.
Yeah. And that's Keaton Beach is the one that I use the most.
Piece of property out of Keaton Beach on Henry Gibson Road that's just had a river sign put up. It's about a 15 acre property with a creek on it. You remember your hatchery idea of it? That property has just been put on the market recently. Take a look at it.
I will.
It's a nice little property got a house on it. A nice price tag.
once an idea like this is initialized and we have the project going forward, whether it may be in your position or wherever it may be, once a project like this is built, they take off. Is anybody familiar with Key Biscayne and the history of Key Biscayne down there? You know, you drive over the bridge and you see this aquarium out there. Okay, on your left hand side you had the boating event where they used to raise boats. Okay, at one time there was nothing but pine trees there, and they came and they created this aquarium, and people from around the world invested there to preserve that. That's a large preserve right on the other side of Key Biscayne right there. Nobody can ever touch it. So a multitude of things come along with these projects here. When I saw that, that's what I thought about, was Key Biscayne. So that may be something to look into, the comparisons of these type projects versus what happened in Miami.
At one time, University of South Florida was going to come up here and go out on Finn Holloway. Is that Finn Holloway? I don't know where that is right now. But
it's still active. We have a couple of meetings down there.
Yeah.
George McKay's Law,
So. There's something going to happen, I was told, by November 14th with the University of Central Florida.
Yeah.
So I was told.
Coast,
it's
called Lake Coast something. We've had two or three meetings down there.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very, very interesting.
But I'm glad they know that others notice that. When you go other places for fishing, I go to the Seminole and Bayou all the time. I pull my boat 200 miles to go fishing because it's so pleasant to go. And they have things to offer.
Yeah.
This same what I hear them talking about when I went to see Nancy the other day, saw so many trucks down there, I wouldn't know where to go, even go to put my boat in. Down there, you don't have that problem.
Sure.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Number 9, the board to receive employment law update from County Administrator.
This is just an informational item to bring to your attention that the Department of Labor is going to make some changes in what they consider the minimum wage for exempt employees, which would be at the point that we would have to start paying overtime. So this is something new that has come to our attention. We did not budget for overtime for this particular group of employees. We will be attending an employment law update seminar in December. So we're in the information gathering process right now. I believe that what we can do is offer comp time to these employees rather than paying overtime. That's a provision that we may be able to offer to our employees, but we will be working on a policy and more information for the board. We just didn't want you to be surprised if we, in December, if we say, okay, January, we're going to have to make some changes.
Does it have to be an offer or can it be a mandate?
That's something that we're trying to iron out. Now, my understanding is that for local, state, and federal governments, we've always had the ability to offer compensatory time versus paying overtime for certain positions, which would be your exempt positions versus your hourly positions. We just need to narrow that down, and we got this guidance very late. We just received it from Department of Labor. So we are trying to work through all of those details, which we'll have to do fairly quickly. Yes, ma'am. Now, this is the same rule just about that came up in 2016. And then right before it was to take effect, we got a new president, and so this has been basically shelved since then. But so there was some, I would say, negotiations back and forth, some changes were made. So the initial annual and hourly rates that were being discussed have been changed some. But it still will affect, I would say, a handful of our employees. And we're working on preparing for that. I just wanted to make sure that we gave the board the information, so if you heard about it, you would know that we are working on it, and we will bring forth information as we receive it.
Thank you. You're welcome. Okay, number 10, the board should continue discussion of the toll road. I picked up a couple of extra packets last week. I have another one, if anybody would want it. It was what was given to us. And basically, the second task force meeting was last Wednesday in Citrus County. And the first thing is they went over the government and sunshine law again, just they're really big on that. And but the main thing is they introduced an approach of identifying avoidance, minimization, mitigation, and enhancement considerations. And most of the day was spent talking about those things. And you know, there's a lot to consider in terms of wetlands and conservation areas and historical areas and wildlife and you name it, and their intent is to minimize the impact as much as they can. And so everybody's still wanting to know, where's the road going to be? And here's, after talking with some of the leadership there, this is what I think. Okay. I think that they're working on this road, and at some point in time, and I believe the next meeting in December that's going to be here in Taylor County, they may start talking about that a little bit. But I think that they're going to present their plans of where they think this road is going to go. Then the task force, and I asked this question when we took a break, I ran up front to, you know, said, what is our role? What are we going to be doing, the task force? I said, and when he told me that, I said, so basically we're like an advisory committee. And he said, yes, you are. So basically I think they're going to present a road plan, and then we're going to be able to give input, is what was said. I said, well, will you be coming to Perry and meeting with our engineer and some of us? And he said, oh, yes, we will. So at that point in time, we can start identifying what we think we'd like to go. And I don't know if that's going to amount to a hill of beans or not. I don't know. But like I said before, I started working with Kenneth and Rwanda and putting some things together of what we think, and this board certainly, should have input into that. But I'm sure it's a done deal. As I said before, this was I think it was put together by our governor and the Senator Galvano. And then it quickly passed through the legislature this year. So it's pretty much a done deal. We just need to capitalize on it as much as we can. Wherever it comes through Taylor County, try to make the best of it. It may open up opportunities for us. We've talked about some different scenarios, Kenneth and I and Wanda, of what we'd like to see happen. Of course, when I got there, I heard Jefferson County kind of had some of the same ideas too. So I think everybody wants to maximize the benefit and minimize the any negative impact. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I know. But I do hope that everybody will be able to be at the meeting in December. What I need to know going forward, I just need to know exactly where you four are. Because as I start working through this, I need to know if we're all on the same page. If you're for this, you're going to support it, or are we going to get down the road and say, no, we don't want this? Commissioner Moody?
I can tell you exactly what I'm for. I'm for it 100%, because I was at Gainesville this afternoon on Friday afternoon, coming up 75 this way, and you couldn't believe the traffic. You have bumper to bumper on both lanes. And that isn't from danger. I mean, the people all going 80, 85 miles an hour, and they all in a hurry. And we're gonna have to have another road somewhere. And it looks like we'd all and just got them up through here, I think. I'm for it, I'm the thing.
I'm for it with the caveat that I want us to do everything we can to minimize the effects. If we have any input on where it goes, realizing that there are a lot of people in Taylor County that don't want it cured. Mm-hmm. I think we're past that point. I think it's coming, whether this commission wants it to come or not. So I'm waiting to gather as much information as I can to try to steer it into the right place.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm basically for it.
Okay. Yes.
You know, I don't have a problem with the road because it looked like it's a done deal before I even heard about it. When they appropriated the money to do stay, it's already on. Now, but I do know, while sister county north of us, they said if Taylor County don't want it, bring it on.
Yeah.
Madison.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And even the commissioners up there told me, said, Jim, if you got anything to do with it, steer to us. You all don't need it. We need it. You know, well, I don't know what kind of mind they're thinking with. But then I look at Jefferson County. Jefferson County say, we want to stay the way we are. We don't want nothing to do with it. So our position, I don't know what our position is. I do know the people who are pushing it. They almost got a plan to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost got a way to do it. And we, the thing that I do hope, that we do have some say. And it's going to be little. There ain't gonna be much.
I think it's more or less just a courtesy call that they're giving out to us now. It's past anybody's say. It's forward progress. Okay. Even if, say, for instance, hypothetically, it does not have an exit here or an entrance. Okay. But eventually, the taxation will trickle into this company here in this county. Eventually, it will. That would be like an indirect impact in this county. It really doesn't matter to me either way if they build a road or not, but necessity is there and it's been proven, and they will build that road wherever they please.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm just, you know, going forward, when I'm at these meetings,
yeah.
I just want to know that I can say our board is... Yeah. For the road, in favor of the road, but we want to have as much input as we can.
I don't know how much that'll be, but we're going to work really hard to, we've got two local people that are involved with this through the state. I feel real good about that. You've got Ryan Asmus that grew up here, went to school here, and he's one of the main ones. And you've got Rosemary Edwards Woods, who grew up here, family did. And so I talked with both of them pretty extensively last week. And, you know, I talked about our concern about where this road would be. We don't want it to negatively impact our businesses on 19. We want as many access roads as we can. And if Jefferson County doesn't want it, that's, I said, you know what, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
Because then we can make our little hub here and go straight to 10, and maybe that would be really good for us.
That'd be a blessing. That would be good. That would generate a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
That would generate jobs.
Well, let me say this. When I'm with the planning council, there are some people in Alachua County who do not want it. They don't want it nowhere near this place.
Wow.
Well, the reason they don't want it near this place is because they're building everything they can build in Alachua County. And when you read the statistics, they're the one that comes to Steam Hatch and do the marvelous fishing, and the small community is what they want. They also said the springs and the ecology out there, you know, they want it to remain the same, but they don't want it in their county. Now, they want growth in their county, so they can make $500,000 to $600,000 a year. But they want to keep Taylor County small, so they can come down with those poor folks and do this.
That's right.
Well, then when you look at who's coming from Georgia to Keaton Beach, it's a bunch of Georgia people coming down there. They want to keep it small, so they can come to a table. But they coming from big counties out of Georgia where they want to make, you know, big money and keep our little town small. So we got to be proactive in thinking, do we want to stay where we are, or do we want to grow with it?
Well, if the road's going to come here, we've got to maximize our benefit if as much as we can. Ollie?
I want to come. David Shadegren with Pleasant Shepherd, Pleasant Master, and Brian Coffin, who's been talking to all those folks, and now the officials of it, they are part of it, okay?
Yeah.
But the point I want to make, if there's any county ready for it, it's us. The Town County Division 26, and we anticipate this, okay?
Yeah.
The villages, I got people in Shaker of getting out of the villages, and the villages, where they divided that two counties up in three acre tracts, they destroyed those counties.
Yeah.
And John Wise, who was first governor of CEO of them, they destroyed Sumter and Lake County. But then the other side of that, Citrus County, we look at those two counties as a term for the end of two different things, but we didn't want to be like Citrus. And there's not a native constitution officer in Citrus County, I think. She is just got elected. But I almost think that they just took it over. And you see what it is. Now they all part and get people out of there. I'm not going to say what I'm part of, but if it does come, I think it's coming. I think it's a done deal. I think that I went to a task, I know two task force members that meeting in May or the night, and they, it's just a window dressing thing to go through now. But we had hundreds on that task force. McNally, we protected hunting, we protected everything, I think. And I think we're ready for it. If it comes, I think it's coming, we just sit back and watch. But anyway, I talked to Danny Brown about the vision. We talked the other day. And those things were still in place. It's going to be good for a major landowner, I think. I know it will. Anyway, I'm going to make that. We were criticized for the vision. We had 18 public hearings. People come talk about what they want to have county be 50 years out. No plan is still in place. It's been Danny Ryan, he and I talking. It's anybody and anybody we are. Jefferson County North, most people don't know that Jefferson County North of Greenville. You get toured by Jefferson County North of Greenville. Anyway,
let me say this. There's 1,000 people moving to Florida today.
That's what we were saying we're doing the division.
The largest county in the state, one of the largest counties in the state of Florida, Sarasota County. When that comes, it's going to change the landscape until it comes. Eventually, it will be changed.
We got to talk about
when they fill up all the way up there, they're going to bring it down here, and we're going to start. Then we're going to start having more people dying every day in Florida than they is coming because of the aging.
But you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, that don't want the road to come through, yeah, or when they have any facts or anything about it, they just flat out don't want the road to come through. And I sat, I talked with all the commissioners from the counties that are involved. In Citrus County, I sat by that commissioner, and they are very excited. They want the road.
They need to get
people out there. Lafette County, Madison County, yeah, said the same thing. If y'all don't want it, no, it's fine. No. But, you know, and then with Jefferson County, I see signs all over Jefferson County that no to the toll road. I heard that they had passed a resolution, but I did talk with the chair down there. And I said, are you for it? And she said, yes, but then I'm hearing other things, so I really don't know. I really don't know where Jefferson is.
Yeah, well, there's three buildings. They've been just building up there. Have you seen those three buildings? No. They built two, and they got one more.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just, you know, wanted to brief y'all on what was talked about. And there were a lot of people, again, at the end of the meeting, and they give everybody that wants to speak a chance. They can speak for 3 minutes. And every single one of them did not want the road to come. But it was supposed to be environmental people.
Yeah,
there was people that moved to a small community, but that's where they wanted to live, and they don't want it to change. They want to keep it that way. But when we have these meetings, y'all can come.
What day did you say it was going to be?
December 17th. December 17th at the Bouquet.
They didn't tell about this idea, Pam.
No, they didn't. But y'all can come to the meetings.
Yeah.
You'll have to sit where the visitors sit, but at least you get to be there and help me, you know, when the time comes. So I want this whole board involved with this thing.
I had a friend that had a record business over at Lake City, and he said when I came, he did, you know, he had a little small record business, but when them major highways come through there, he had a whole fleet of records and hired a bunch of people and you know, give a lot of people jobs. There's just a lot of things that will come off of a road like that people aren't even talking about that's going to give people jobs and money.
Well,
yeah.
Y'all come to the meetings if you can and want to. And each time that I go, I'll come back and kind of give you a report of things. But this is not a Pam thing. This is a everybody. You know, everybody, the citizens, when we have it here, should come to the meetings and, you know, just hear what's going on and express your opinion.
You just need to come close to town as you can.
And that's what we're saying. We want it as close, you know, that need to be 9 miles out. But if you see a sign that says gas 9 miles, you're not going to get off and get gas.
Right.
In 9 miles.
And my greatest fear is Jefferson does not want it, and they won't go through Madison County. They're going to go on the east side of Perry, out just the side of Buckville, somewhere, you know?
That's what I'm scared of.
That's what I'm scared of. We're going to get in.
Well, you're not going to put it through the bay mouth. It looks like right now it's going to come through because the man that owns the property that they've already agreed to buy the property from is all west of us.
Is that right?
He owns Four Rivers Timber Land.
He's heavily involved in this.
$500,000 of the governor's campaign last year.
Right.
No, right.
He definitely is a player.
I think we'll sell him there.
Well, you know, I'd like to have.
Especially if Jefferson County back out, if it could, then if we had a big hub here, that would be great.
They're not going to listen to Jefferson.
Yeah. No, they're going to go out
there. But
it's called eminent domain.
Well, they may not have to do much eminent domain because, especially in Taylor County.
Well, this is Mr. Turner on the subject probably up here. Yeah.
Okay. That's all that I have. Does anybody? Yes.
I would like to ask the, I would like to ask the commission's permission to use the walking trail at Keaton Beach on our $1 million walking trail to do a 5K walk run the Saturday after Thanksgiving. It's to raise money for cancer research for SHAMS, Cancer Research Center, and then also a portion of it stays here to help cancer patients under treatment with gas cars to get back and forth to treatment or their power bill or whatever is necessary while they're under treatment to give them a hands up. It's just a simple 5K walk run. We'll have a tent, a pink tent put up where they come and register, sign up, hold a harmless agreement. They have a choice of a t-shirt, and it's usually about an hour and a half. And we'll help them mark out a the walking trail.
We can't vote tonight, but
I didn't know if it was something we needed to vote on or if I needed a permit.
Does anybody have a problem?
I don't have any objection to it, but I've been wondering why you have to ask permission. It's a walking trail anyhow.
It's a public function.
They wanna set up at the boat ramp and have the registration there. And then they also want to. I've got it set aside for the agenda.
I don't think there'll be any problem with it.
Okay. I'm for it. But the sooner I can get it, the sooner I can get the advertising out, and we'd like to make it a annual thing.
When is our next meeting? Next week?
November 7th, I believe.
Let's see.
It should be plenty of time. This is after Thanksgiving. Right.
It's the 30th of Saturday, 30th of November.
Yeah, I'm sure it won't be a problem at all.
Okay.
Sounds like everybody's okay.
Good.
Sir?
What
is the name of the organization? Jogging for Jugs. We just had a 5K in Steen Hatchie.
Are you going to do a 5K in the park after? Are you going to do a couple circles around the park? That's not.
No, we're following walking trail down to Dark Island. We haven't mapped it off yet as far as mileage, but they'll have to turn around at some point and come back.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that's not that long there.
By the time you go down there and turn around, it's going to be, yeah.
Okay.
Just quit making plans and then we'll more than likely give you okay officially at the next meeting.
I'm ready.
Jogging for what?
Jogging for Jugs. It's a registered 501c3.
Jogging for
Jugs.
Can you do that?
Let me get you a t-shirt.
I'm gonna leave it right there.
A t-shirt. Anybody else have anything before we adjourn? We've had a very interesting meeting. It's been a good meeting, and I appreciate y'all being here and staying with us. And if nobody has anything else, then we'll vote, but we'll just say goodbye.